Let me tell you about Laura Magdalene Eisenhower, cosmic mythologist, global alchemist, the great-granddaughter of President Dwight David Eisenhower, and she was the target of a sophisticated recruitment, she says, to join the Mars colony back in 2006-7, revealing her story along with many deeper layers connected to the agenda. Laura is also on a profound mission to complete the Eisenhower legacy and temper the forces, as you know, when he was leaving office, talked about us, warned about the military-industrial complex by awakening unity consciousness. And here she is on Coast to Coast. Hi, Laura. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, George?
Good. We met at a conference some time ago, didn't we?
Yes, we did. Awaken Aware.
Yes, we sure did. So tell me a little bit about your involvement. And Andrew's with us here, too. Tell me about your involvement in this entire program.
Okay. Well, it was kind of snuck up on me out of nowhere. In 2006, I went to a festival in Virginia and, you know, just attended and really didn't have any expectation coming out of it. Met people, and one particular person I met, I really hit it off with, and ended up, you know, spending the evening getting to know him and just talking to him, and there was just a lot of similarities, a lot of things that we connected upon, and we just decided to start seeing each other. And nothing about Mars had come up at this point, but when I was visiting with him, I was living in D.C. at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So he would come up and visit me, and he would go to these meetings in the Washington area. And it was very hush-hush. And, of course, I was very curious about it because he was starting to share some of the things that were going on in those meetings relating to going to Mars. A lot of it seemed to be communication that he was getting from what he called the patrons. It was something he was connecting to telepathically. But, you know, then he would go to these meetings and, you know, more started to come out of it that got me really thinking, got me really curious. But it didn't really get to the point of, you know, what it ended up becoming until I was engaged to him and until I moved to North Carolina. Then everything started to really, you know, come out of it because obviously I was asking more questions and it wasn't just something, you know, of what I initially thought, which was just, you know, a concept that was maybe going to be implemented in the far future, something, you know, a bunch of researchers getting together, talking about, you know, possibly terraforming Mars. I didn't quite see the full picture, you know, when I was dating him, or else maybe more red flags would have come
up. Sure.
But so anyway, I moved to North Carolina and was really paying attention to what was going on because it just got really strange. He was definitely receiving some level of information telepathically, and the phone calls he was getting were, you know, giving him instructions that would lead him to do missions for them and just kind of disappear. And so I started to really pay attention to the names that he was discussing or the people that were, you know, at these meetings. And, you know, and then, of course, the Mars thing just got to a point where this was not just some idea in the future or some, you know, concept that they were researching. This was, you know, heavy duty, and there was a lot of intensity and urgency. And it was about, you know, leaving Earth with the target date 2012 to colonize, to reach Mars to be at this colony or, you know, to colonize.
And why didn't you go?
Well, I, you know, from the very beginning when I was hearing about Mars, I had this gut instinct that this is not what I came here to do. I was born with a really, really strong mission. You know, just even just growing up in the Eisenhower family, you're just really, you know, pulled into, you know, thinking real deep about not just the history that Eisenhower went through, but really just, you know, questioning why am I in this family and what am I here to do? And I was really in touch with it as a child, really in touch with him as a being, and not just on a, you know, war level or just, you know, him as a president or a military guy, but really him as a being, you know, connecting to extraterrestrials,
sure,
connecting to layers that are very ignored and not ever talked about. So,
was he alive, by the way, when you were born?
No, he wasn't, but his Mamie was, and I knew her and spent some time with her out at the farm. But I definitely was connecting with his spirit. And so, you know, when this offer came along, it seemed to really fit into me breaking free of a level of control I had felt my whole life. I felt, you know, somehow targeted or somehow monitored or, you know, something weird was always going on, something that didn't feel right. And so when this whole episode started to play out, I was really awakening to, you know, just this inner strength or this, you know, desire to really make clear what my mission is and that maybe they would listen and maybe they would consider it, because I'm thinking, you know, if they're really pushing me going to Mars, they really got to hear what I'm here to do on Earth. And there wasn't really any room for that.
Are you glad you didn't go?
Well, I'm absolutely glad I didn't go.
You might still be there.
I might still be there. Well, the target date was 2012, so I'd probably be arranging plans and, you know, really getting things geared up for that. And, of course, I have kids, so this would have affected their lives. It would have affected, you know, everything. And nothing felt right. And as I investigated the names and I really started to just understand the urgency and the intensity behind it, I linked it to Alternative 3, which came about in the Eisenhower administration, and I really did my research and really started to understand the deeper, deeper layers of why this agenda exists. What is the plan? What does this mean for humanity? What's going to happen to humanity in the event that a bunch of us move over there, especially somebody with such a profound mission here on Earth? So to me, it was like being ripped from my soul, being ripped from my mission. And so even just the idea of it from the beginning, and part of the reason I sort of ignored it at first, was because there was no way I was going to go. And I'm thinking, well, I'm in a relationship with this guy. I can convince him to stay on Earth with me. I didn't realize there was mind control involved. You know, I was pretty naive at that time. I didn't know a lot about this stuff, except for, you know, people's stories or just, you know, in the movies. And I found this was not easy to break free of at all. And it got really, really intense. And so I just had to just expose it. I had to talk about it and really anchor, you know, my mission here
on
Earth.
Well, you made a good move not going, Laura, I would guess. And Andy, I want to bring you back in here. And Laura, thank you for being on the program. Laura Eisenhower, the great-granddaughter of the late President Dwight David Eisenhower. It looks like they went after a lot of people who had relatives involved in higher positions in government, like your father, like Stilling's father, and, of course, the late president. Would you think?
Well, I think that they were working through CIA personnel. Of course, Brett's father had linkages also, not just to the Office of Naval Intelligence, but then Lockheed, and went on to work at NASA JPL. My father had been involved in classified aerospace projects going all the way back to the Ramjet project, which he joined at Curtis Wright in October of 1952, right after the July 1952 overflight of our nation's capital by nine flying saucers clocked at 7,000 miles per hour by Langley Air Force Base, you know, setting off the whole Eisenhower era interaction with extraterrestrials and concern about what the extraterrestrial situation meant. So I think operationally they were working through CIA families. Of course, it's fairly clear that President Obama's mother, Stanley Ann Dunham, at least did some information gathering for the CIA in Kenya and in Indonesia. I think in terms of the young people that they were selecting, not just during my era in the early 80s when we were going up there, but certainly individuals like Laura that they were recruiting 25 years later, I think they were looking for a set of human factors. Clearly, intelligence was part of it. They were clearly selecting people with type B personalities, namely cooperative, conciliatory personalities. You wouldn't want somebody to force their will when you were up on the surface in the early 80s, nor be living with them on a colony on Mars. I think one thing that also defines all of us, not just my peers of Obama, Dugan, and Stillings, but also of Laura, is that we certainly have a disposition as polymaths. In other words, we're individuals who are interested in many things and have qualifications in many different disciplines. So I think they were looking, you know, for intelligence and for some leadership ability, but also essentially people who could be good team members and who could also bring a lot of different skills to our experiences on the surface of another planet.
Okay, Andy, and we're going to take phone calls with you in just a few minutes, by the way, for the amount of people who truly want to ask you questions about this bizarre thing. Producer Tom is here jumping up and down. What's up?
We have somebody on a line that I think is pretty important to this conversation. You want to go to him?
What line is that?
Check it out. It's right there in the wild card line. 5.
All right. You're welcome to Coast. Hello?
Yeah, hello.
Ed, is this you?
Roger.
Major Ed Dames with us?
Roger.
Well, it's good to have you here. This is interesting. Andrew, I'm going to talk with Ed Dames for a little bit about this. Ed, have you listened to the show at all tonight? Or?
I have. Your first guest was great. Economically, like I've said, Germany is going back to the Deutschmark, and the European Union is going to break up. So.
Well, and I assume you're calling and you're on because your name's come up a lot tonight.
It has. It reminds me of the Father Malachi Martin discussion we had years ago.
Okay, so let me rephrase for a lot of folks who are joining us right now. We're with Andrew Bishago and a number of other people. Andrew's been on the show before. They claim that they were part of a CIA program. They went to Mars. And that they say, Ed, and I might as well ask you, that you were the one who conducted the Mars training program when they were kids, teenagers.
Yeah, let me just say a couple of things.
All right.
A few things, too. One, there are transpersonal factors in our lives, and we view reality as through very microscopic and myopic eyes. So there are transpersonal factors there, too. And lots of things can go on in that alternate reality. I would really recommend your listeners and your guests to read Jacques Vallée's Passport to Magonia. Jacques, I've been in the field with him on UFO studies in the field, and he's brilliant. And that book... His ideas about parallel worlds are very apropos to the topic and the discussion at hand. But factually, in terms of chronology, in the summer of 1980, where Andrew says I was teaching him, I was actually an electronic warfare officer, the first one in the history of the 2nd Armored Cavalry Regiment in Germany in the Cold War, in my Hubschrauber and my Panzer, my tank and my helicopter, patrolling the former East German and Czech border. So if I did teach them before I even knew anything about remote viewing, what it was in this transpersonal reality, a different world.
Huh. All right. So you're basically saying, though, that you weren't part of this Mars training program.
The Pegasus project doesn't exist, and the Montauk chair doesn't exist. No,
right.
not in our day-to-day reality.